What is Christianity really? That's the question of this fall series. What is Christianity really? And it's a little bit of a bold question because it almost implies that we're going to answer that question. And we're not. We're just going to ask the question and then try our best to figure it out. Because nobody has the answer to that question. No one. For 2,000 years, there have been well over 100,000 denominations and movements within the Christian church in hundreds of countries over the centuries, in 7,100 languages and 3,800 cultures. So does anybody have the answer on what is Christianity really? The answer is no. Christianity is this very diverse, wonderful, ever-changing religious movement that has become one of the great religions on earth. But what we're going to try to do is to unpack a lot of the things that have been packed on the original mission of Jesus. And we're going to try the best we can using the Bible, using, of course, what we read about Jesus in the scripture, to get to the very core, the very heart of what Christianity is really. And what we started with the first couple of weeks is really come to the conclusion that it's not about what it has become. In other words, Christianity has become this quest for, well, we've got to believe the right things. Do we believe the right things? And it's this quest to believe the right things. I don't think that's Christianity. Or it's about being, you know, devoutly following the commands and obeying the commands or meeting the religious expectations, all of the worship services and prayer disciplines and Bible reading disciplines. Is it about following Jesus by the things that we do? And over the first 2 weeks, we've really said, you know, it's not. It's about, at the core, just following Jesus. Because it's not about seeking the true doctrine. It's about seeking the truth, who is a person. What did Jesus say in John 14:6? He says, I am the way, I am the truth, and I am the life. So Christianity is about really believing in and following Jesus, not the Christian religion. That's so important for us to understand. And yes, the things that we do sort of fall in line with what could be considered the Christian religion, but that is a religion. At the core, what is Christianity? It's about believing in and following Jesus. Very, very simply, with all of the diversity of all the expressions that have happened over the thousands of years. So week one, 2 weeks ago, we said, well, what is Christianity? It is simply about Jesus. It is about Jesus. And then last week, we talked about another unique part of Christianity, and that is it is about faith. It's not about works. It's not about what we do for God. It's not about believing the right things or doing the right things. It's simply faith, trusting what he's done for us. We don't do anything for God. He doesn't need anything. God's not in need, waiting for us to believe the right things. Oh, you better believe the right thing. Ah, now you did. Okay, well, good for you. You better do the right things. Oh, now you're doing the right things. Oh, good for you. No, God is not in need. He's not in need of anything from us. God is self-sufficient. God's just fine. It is we who need to simply trust him. He forgave us. He gave us love and grace and mercy through Jesus. Our job is simply to trust what he's already given us in Christ. So Christianity is Jesus, Christianity is faith. Today we're going to talk about Christianity as a community. Christianity is a community. And I've done a lot of research on Christian community and the definition of Christian community or various modes of Christian community over the 2,000 years of its existence. And I kind of cobbled together this definition that is probably really terrible, but it's my best shot. Here we go. Christian community is a close-knit group of friends who treat each other like family, living in the love of God through Jesus Christ and living out the love of God with one another. It's kind of my best effort at a definition of Christian community. That we are a close-knit group of friends that treat each other like family. So that's about relationship. Christian community is not about just people gathering together for an event like this. We'll talk about kind of what this is, church services, here in a minute. Christian community is deeper than people just getting together. It's really about building a bond of friendship that is so close that over time we begin to treat each other like family. We're there for each other. And all of that is centered on living in the love of God through Jesus Christ, because that's really what Jesus came to deliver, the message that you are loved just as you are, where you are, no matter what. And if the Christian community can embrace that kind of love from God towards us, then we start living out that love of God toward each other. I mean, there's nothing better in life. That's Christian community. And that Christian community was experienced to a degree very early in the Christian faith. And for all kinds of reasons, the Christian church tends to divide, judge each other, judge the world, get kind of harsh. and start separating and or start kind of congealing into this rote religious, you know, stale thing that really nobody wants to be involved with. So how did it get from a close-knit group of community, a close-knit group of friends that treat each other like family, just completely submerged in the love of God, how did it go from that to something that is just a stale, rote, kind of lifeless religious thing? Well, it's just what, it's what we do. It's what human beings do. We just create, you know, lifeless things and sometimes lose the altruistic purity of how this Christian movement began. Group of friends that treat each other like family, completely immersed in the love of God, living in the love of God, living out the love of God. It really is as simple as that. It's Christian community. Now, in the very earliest expression of the Christian faith, this was probably dialed in by about the year 200. It's called the Apostles' Creed. The earliest written form might have been around 341 AD, but let's just say for nearly 2,000 years, the Apostles' Creed has been the core expression of the Christian faith. And I want to read it. Some of you grew up in churches where the Apostles' Creed was recited every week, and so you're like, I really have to recite it. No, you can just enjoy it. This is the modern English version. And what you'll see is what Christianity is really. You will see very quickly, it's about Jesus, faith in Jesus, what the Apostles' Creed calls belief. And then at the very end, you'll see a vision for Christian community. So here it is, nearly 2,000-year-old Apostles' Creed. I believe in God, the Father Almighty, creator of heaven and earth. Then immediately, sentence two, it gets right to Jesus. I believe in Jesus Christ, God's only Son, our Lord, who was conceived by the Holy Spirit, born of the Virgin Mary, suffered under Pontius Pilate, was crucified, died, was buried. He ascended into the dead. On the third day, he rose again. He ascended into heaven. He is seated at the right hand of the Father and will come again to judge the living and the dead. Then it goes to community. I believe in the Holy Spirit, the holy global church, the communion of saints, the forgiveness of sin, the resurrection of the body, and life everlasting. The communion of the saints, the community of those who believe in Jesus and follow Jesus, that's a strong community that's there for each other, treats each other like family, completely immersed in the love of Christ. So Christianity is Jesus, Christianity is faith, Christianity is community. But what kind of community? When we talk about community, there's a lot of different forms of community. There's very surface level kinds of community, and there are the deepest forms of community. And all of them are fine. All of them are needed. The surface level community can simply be a casual gathering of friends. Let's meet at a restaurant, hang out, just have small talk, food and some drinks. That's great. That's community, genuine community. You don't have to get deep. You don't have to get honest and vulnerable. You just are having a good time together. That's fantastic. Pickleball communities are all over the place, right? New pickleball courts, and it's just kind of sweeping the nation, the fastest growing sport in the nation. I mean, there's not a week that goes by where I am meeting new people that are starting pickleball and having the time of their lives. Just gathering together as a group of friends with common interest, having a good time. I'm involved, as you probably well know, with the golf community. So it's a pretty close-knit group of people here in town, and it's great. You just hang out with each other. Sometimes conversations get deep. Sometimes they just stay with trash talking, and all of it's fine. I prefer the trash talking. But that's a community. I had the opportunity to go to the Charger-Raiders game last Sunday. I mean, I ran out of church. I rarely run out of church. I like to hang around, but I was like, out of here. Amen. I'm gone. Hit the road, go to the Raider-Charger game, and, you know, typical L.A. fashion, 75% Raiders fans, a few Charger fans. The group of people I was with, half were Raiders fans, half were Charger fans, and there's a community around just being a fan of your sports team, right? And you see somebody with the same jersey, there's an immediate connection there. It's surface level, but it's a lot of fun. And Raiders were trash-talking, and Charger fans were trash-talking themselves. The Raider fans were saying, hey, listen, we're not going to win this game. We're not Raiders, we're faders, and we're going to lose. The Charger fans were saying, oh, hey, we're in the lead, which guarantees a loss if you're a Charger fan. So we were kind of trash-talking each other, just having a good time, surface-level community. It's genuine community. It's a lot of fun, but it's still surface-level. Music is a community, right? My wife and daughter were at SoFi Stadium at the Taylor Swift concert, right? That's a community that's just kind of immediate. You go into that concert venue, and it's all teenage girls and their moms and two dads, and it was just great. Those two dads got together, became best friends. That's community, though. You're just having a good time. Alex, the gentleman who leads Wagar, he's going to the U2 concert at the brand new $2.4 billion Las Vegas Sphere. It's basically a giant ball of technology, and he just can't wait to go there to experience it. And everybody is going to be singing every U2 song at the top of their lungs. It's community. Might be surface level, but it's community. There's communities in your neighborhoods and membership groups and workplaces that's all over, right? But there's different kinds of community. There is surface level community, and then there's deep community. The problem that we tend to have as Americans, particularly sort of post-pandemic, is very rarely do we experience the deeper levels of community. That's just science. That's just, I mean, this has been studied as much, if not more than anything else, post-pandemic is the level of community that we lack as Americans. Dr. M. Scott Peck has done a lot of work, a lot of research, a lot of writing on the different layers of community, and I'm going to ask you some questions along the way. The first layer of community is pseudo-community. Now, I don't like Dr. Peck's word here. Pseudo kind of means, fake, right? And the way he describes pseudo-community to me is like it's genuine community. It's just on the surface. Workplace community, neighborhoods, churches, that, like today, we just get together. We have a common interest. Gatherings of people with common interest. He calls that pseudo-community. I call that kind of just a surface-level community. And I think it's great. I love surface-level community. I love coming to church and singing some songs and having a good time and rallying around, I think what God has for us. And hopefully our lives are better, our families are better. As a result, we make the world a little bit better. It's meaningful. But a lot of what happens in church, in your neighborhoods, and in your workplaces and concerts and sporting events is pseudo-community. It's surface-level community. Now, every once in a while, something deep and profound happens. Today, about a half a dozen times already, I had meaningful conversations with people who were going through a tough time. And they were prayed for over there, and I got a chance to pray for and hug some folks over here. And genuine community sometimes, well, not sometimes, regularly happens in the middle of a pseudo-community. But pseudo-community is people with common interests gathering together, and it's great. Here's where pseudo-community is tested. In a pseudo-community, if there's a crisis, for example, if you're in a pseudo-community and your life falls apart for whatever reason, are those people going to be there for you? In a pseudo-community, you just don't know until it happens. So let's say your family falls apart. If your family falls apart, are those people that you are connected with really going to be there for you? Are they going to bear burdens with you? Are they going to be by to your left and be to your right and pick you up in time of need and carry you forward? Are they going to bear those burdens with you? Emotionally, socially, relationship, they're going to be there. Sometimes when life falls apart, we begin to see that the pseudo-community is not really a genuine community. It's not a true community. So we go through what's called a period of chaos. Chaos. When your pseudo-community of people who share common experiences aren't there for you in time of need, that's a period of chaos. Where people who you thought were friends were not friends. You thought you were going to be supported, but you weren't. Maybe your life fell apart and you're feeling all alone, or maybe you just made a terrible mistake. You did something terribly wrong to offend people or alienate people, and what you realize is they're not going to forgive you. They're distancing themselves from you. They're punishing you. Your community falls apart, and no one's there. That's a period of chaos. Have you gone through that kind of chaos? Following chaos is a period of emptiness. And that's where you're done sort of scrambling, you're done wondering, are people going to be there for you, and you're left with this hollow feeling that I am alone. I might be surrounded by people, but I'm alone. I'm feeling by myself. That's a period of emptiness. And that period of emptiness can result in one of three things. It can result in a total retreat from all the pseudo-communities. From your workplace communities, maybe even your family community, your neighborhood community, your sporting events, your music, all of that, you just kind of retreat because you're a wounded person. You've gone through something pretty traumatizing, either that you created or just life happened to you. Your people were not there for you, and you've gone through the chaos, and now you're feeling that empty, hollow loneliness, and you're retreating. You're like, I'm done. I'm done. And that's totally understandable. If you've been hurt by a community that you thought were your friends, it's totally natural and totally normal for you to retreat and say, you know what, I'm just kind of done. Another thing you can do is to say, okay, listen, I'm feeling empty, I'm feeling alone, but I'm not done, I'm still gonna show up. I'm gonna show up to work and have lunch with those people. I know they may not be my, you know, true friends or true community, but I'm gonna still hang out. I've been wounded by church. I've been rejected or judged at church, but I'm still gonna show up. And some of you here today, especially some of you who might be new, you took a risk today. You might have been wounded by church. They rejected you for something you did or something, a question you had or a doubt, or you walked through a period of a funk and the church just wasn't there for you and you're back. You're kind of doing the courageous work of showing up. The third thing you can do besides retreating or just sort of reluctantly or cynically showing up is you could take some risks. And you could say, you know what? I need true community. I need to be a part of a group that is a deep friendship, that treats each other like family, totally immersed in the love and grace of God. I need that kind of a community. And so I'm gonna take a risk. I'm not just gonna show up reluctantly or cynically. I'm gonna show up and I'm gonna really try to build some friendships. I'm gonna try to show up for other people maybe in their time of need. I'm gonna lead by example. I'm gonna be the friend I hoped people would be to me. I'm gonna take that risk. And I might be rejected, but I'm gonna take the risk. If somebody invites me to their house and I'm probably wanting to say no, I'm gonna say yes and just show up. And I'll probably have a good time. If you haven't invited somebody over to your house in a while, take a risk, invite somebody over to your house. Hey, you wanna hang out? Last night there was tacos and some drinks I won't mention, and showing up and having a good time, right? Nothing wrong with that. Take a risk, take a risk, take a risk. True community is available for all of us, but it does take a risk. I'm defining true community as this: a welcoming, accepting, honest, and unconditionally loving bond of friendship defined by empathy. That sound good? That sound like something we want? Sound like something we could probably all need? And the answer is yes, we all need this. We were all designed to live in true community. But so many people don't enjoy this. I've lived a long period of my life where I did not have this kind of true community. I didn't even know I needed it. I probably at the time thought I was better off without it, right? Let me do my thing. I'm not tied to other people. They're not tied to me. I had enough human beings around. And I thought, I'm fine. I'm surrounded by people. I was a pastor during this time period of not having true community. And I thought I was doing fine until our board here at Rancho, about 12 years ago, during my review, after they said, you're doing the best job we could ever possibly imagine. I don't know if that's what they said. That's just what I remember. But they asked me the question. They said, are you connected to a group of friends who really support you, who you can kind of be honest with and bear burdens with? And I had to think about that. And my honest answer was no. And they said, well, we're gonna help you. It kind of sounds demeaning, right? But we're gonna help you find some friends. I thought, great. I really did appreciate him because they recognized something that was so important to me that I didn't even know I was lacking. They asked me, do you have true community? And my answer honestly was no. And they said, we're gonna help you find true community. And they did. And I started taking some risks. I started showing up to groups and showing up to some networks of other pastors, and some of them were national, some of them were regional. And believe me, I didn't want to go to these things. It's like, they're a bunch of strangers hanging out in a room with a bunch of strangers. It's the last thing I want to do. Within a few years, they became some of my best friends. One of them texts me multiple times during the week. He sends me a text about 8 o'clock every single Sunday morning with a prayer, a well thought out prayer for me, for my family, for you. He sends it every single Sunday at 8 o'clock, like clockwork, and oftentimes throughout the week. There's true community there, but we've got to take the risk to go get it. I'm gonna take a little risk and show you a commercial I'm not sure I should show you. It's a liquor commercial, and I know there's some sensitivities around alcohol. That's true in my own family. But this isn't about liquor, it's not about alcohol. It's about the message of this commercial. It's a 60-second commercial. I saw this 2 weeks ago and it just kind of struck me in a couple ways. One was, this is sort of showing off our need for true community. The way they experience community, we'll talk about. But It's really asking the question, do we have our people? Are we in this wonderful kind of friendship environment where we support each other? It's a Jim Beam commercial, and again, it's not about the liquor. It's about the layers of community, right? So as we play this commercial, is this about pseudo-community? Where is there chaos here or emptiness here? And what is the, you know, this ambition to experience true community? Let's take a look.
Was in the spring, then spring became the summer. Would have believed you'd come along.
Hands, touching hands, reaching out, touching me, touching you.
All right, so kind of fun, but do you see how it kind of hit all the layers of community, right? Here's this opening shot of a gentleman who's clearly struggling, probably experiencing that emptiness coming from a season of chaos. He's just by himself at this bar, and then he's just humming a song, and here we go, right? And we're singing the song all together, smiles ear to ear in 45 seconds. Everybody's kissing and hugging, and do we have genuine community? You probably have pseudo community, right? Everybody singing together in a bar is a lot of fun. It's pseudo community. I guarantee when that song is over and that gentleman goes back home, he doesn't have true community. But they're trying to sell liquor and it's fine. Fine. A recent New York Times article was titled this, Surgeon General, We Have Become a Lonely Nation, It's Time to Fix It. And there is so much research on how lonely our nation is. I'll just give you a couple of highlights from the article. At any moment, about one out of every two Americans is experiencing measurable levels of loneliness. That means half of this room right now, if you were to be honest, is experiencing some level of measurable loneliness. For some of you, it's extreme and acute, and you might be experiencing all of the emotions of extreme and acute loneliness. You've gone through chaos, and you're feeling the emptiness. For some of you, it might be a light-grade feeling of loneliness. It's like, I got people around me, but I don't know if I've got people, you know, that true community. The article says this, one thing is clear, nearly everyone experiences loneliness at some point. But its invisibility is part of what makes it so insidious. We need to acknowledge the loneliness and isolation that millions are experiencing and the grave consequences for our mental health, physical health, and collective well-being. And the article goes on to detail, and this is very famous in America, that 40% of young adults, this is roughly 15 to 25, 40% of young adults report feeling lonely very often. In other words, their loneliness is more acute and is felt at a deeper, more consistent level. As the article says, it's time to fix it. And the only way to fix this, and not that it's an easy fix, it's not a 60-second commercial of everybody singing in a bar, it's not an easy fix. The fix is to put in the work to experience true community. Let me show you the definition of GIN, a welcoming, accepting, honest, and unconditionally loving bond of friendship defined by empathy. What's empathy? Feeling what you feel. I want to feel what you feel. It's not just we have shared interests at the surface level. It's not even that we have a good friendship, but it's my heart's desire to feel what you feel. If you're going through a period of incredible success and enthusiasm and pleasure and joy, I want to experience that with you. You're very successful and you have experienced something. You got a promotion, you got a raise, you met a goal, whatever. I'm not there going, oh, well, good for you. I got my own problem. No, it's like, I want to celebrate with you. I want to smile as wide as you smile. That's empathy. Another part of empathy is to say, I want to hurt when you hurt. If you're crying, I want to cry with you. If you're suffering, I want to suffer with you. That's true community. That takes risk. There's consequences to that. Sometimes it's hard, but that's true community. And that's biblical community. That's the kind of community that Jesus came to establish when he was here. He practiced it with his 12 closest friends. And listen, true community is not all rainbows and unicorns. They struggled together, they failed together, they suffered together, they bore each other's burdens together, they had to forgive each other. Those 12 were best of friends, but at times they were a mess. That's true community. And then Jesus built 70 friends and 120 friends, and over time, thousands of friends, and then he calls us to keep this movement of friendship going, keep this movement of true community going. Might be a little strange, but if Jesus, well, he did, found out that this community of friends turned into an organized religion, I'm thinking he's going to roll his eyes. They were all Jewish by religion, but they received the love of Christ, and they were a great community, and Jesus wanted the community. I don't think he came to establish a new religion, but he did come to establish a tight-knit group of friends, treating each other like family, honest, open, vulnerable, bearing each other's burdens, empathetic, and then building a global movement of love. What it turned into? Just another religion on the pile? But I think we can recapture what Christianity is really. It's a community. Romans 12, 9 through 13 is a great vision of biblical community. Don't just pretend to love others, really love them. Hate what is wrong, hold tightly to the good. Love each other with genuine affection and take delight in honoring each other. When God's people are in need, be ready to help them. Always be eager to practice hospitality. Isn't that a cool little vision of true community? And then we have this Acts chapter 2 model. The church is brand new. It's like days old. Jesus rose from the dead. He spent about 7 weeks just building a group of followers. He commissioned them, empowered them by his Spirit, takes off, and this brand new church hits the street with this message of God's love through Jesus. A community is formed, and here's what they did. Acts chapter 2. As I read this, just put in little things in your brain about, oh, that's really cool, that's really cool, that's really cool. I want that, I want that, I want that. Here we go. All the believers devoted themselves to the apostles' teaching and to fellowship. That's just being together, sharing in meals, including the Lord's Supper, and to prayer. A deep sense of awe came over them, and the apostles performed many miracles and signs among them. All the believers met together in one place and shared everything they had. They sold their property and possessions and shared the money with those in need. They worshiped together in the temple each day, met in homes for the Lord's Supper, and shared their meals with great joy and generosity, all the while praising God and enjoying the goodwill of all the people. And each day the Lord added to their community those who were being saved. Isn't that great? Isn't that great? Now we could say, all right, well, they cheated a little bit, and they did. They were all Jewish, so they were very homogenous. They're all in the same city. They all were following Jesus, and that movement was brand new, right? There's nothing like a brand new thing getting birthed in the community there. There were miracles there that were unique to that one period of time, and they were all being persecuted. Now, we see that a little bit later here, but they were all being persecuted, so they actually relied on each other for their very survival. Very unique group of people. But there's things we can kind of pluck from that group and to say, you know what, even though that was a unique group of people, we can still be like that group, and that we're Jesus-centered. This isn't a religious thing, it's a Jesus thing. We want to say what he said and do what he did. We want to have the love of God shared with each other the way Jesus shared the love of God with us. We can be a learning community, just learning from each other. No one person saying, I've got all the answers and I know all the truth, but a learning community, just sharing life and sharing ideas. We can be a community that's generous. Now, this early church sold their stuff to meet the needs of those among them who were poor. And we may not need to do that right now. We're not being persecuted, but we can be generous with each other and share with each other, and we can be an irresistible community. And I want to close with this idea. We can be an irresistible community. In Acts chapter 2, they loved each other in such a true and powerful and profound way that the world around them said, I want to be a part of that. This little group of Jesus followers loved each other in such true, genuine community that the entire world around them says, I want to participate. And Acts chapter 2 says they enjoyed the favor of all the people. Let me just ask a question. Does the Christian religion right now enjoy the favor of all the people? What's the answer? No. We're kind of jerks sometimes. We're kind of judgy sometimes. We're kind of political sometimes. We're kind of just a normal religion sometimes. If we can just say, what is Christianity really? It's about following Jesus, simple faith, and a community of friends who treat each other like family. And yes, sometimes we're a little quirky and a little broken and a little bit of a mess, but we can love each other really well, no matter what. That is true community. We're going to close in a song that's just a little folksy country kind of vision of what it would be like to just be together. And Dell is going to lead us with a bunch of her friends. And it's a cool song that just kind of wraps up this vision of what true community can be.
Yes, I really like this song because it wasn't intended to be anything about religion right. or anything like that. But when you think about it in the perspective of God, it's like he's talking to us. The first line of the song is, you can hold my hand when you need to let go. Another part that I like is everyone here is just a little bit broken, yeah. but we're all here together. And just yeah. about being at this crowded table, being with everybody that you love and just community and just so important.
Yeah. Well, so you and some of your friends are going to sing this song. Yes. And just feel the truth of this song. It's like, I want to be around that kind of table and I want to be around that kind of fireplace and I want to be around these kinds of friends to be there for me and support me as I am here for them and support them.
So good.
All right,
let's sing.
You can hold my hand when you need to let go. I can be your mountain when you're feeling valley low. I can be your street light showing you the way home. You can hold my hand when you need to let go. Let the room.